Thanks for listening to the Hit That Line Podcast Network. You can now download our new app in the iTunes or Google Play Store. Listen anytime and anywhere on your favorite mobile device. Just search Hit That Line now. This is the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast.
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Stop by 9390 Rogers Avenue for the best liquor, beer, and wine deals in the River Valley.
Arkansas wins a national championship!
Check out Eastside Liquor on Facebook for weekly specials.
Say goodbye! Darren McFadden, 80 yards, touchdown!
Do you want to watch the Morning Rush, Halftime, Even, Ruskin, and Zach? Find our live video stream on Facebook, YouTube, X, Instagram, and Twitch. ESPN Arkansas, more than just radio.
There is a Major League Baseball game being played right now, Matt, and it's not a celebration of Tax Day, Patriots Day in Boston. They do this every year. Usually, it's the same day the Boston Marathon gets run. Red Sox and Guardians playing already into the fifth inning. They had Gronk throw out the first pitch.
Number 87.
Now, you know Gronk probably doesn't do anything in a normal way. I've seen what the first pitch looks like. You want to make a guess as to what he did with his first pitch? Football player, remember, of course.
Oh, I don't know. Did he run a button hook? Did he do a three-step drop? Did he throw it into the ground first?
He spiked it.
Yeah, there you go.
He spiked it on purpose. Wasn't like he was trying to throw a pitch and he bounced it in front of the catcher. He just
like the Florida State, like the old Florida State guy used to throw the arrow into the ground.
He just minus the horse. Not going to let a horse on a pitcher's mound. Probably destroy the thing. Although putting Gronk
unless
up
you're
there
Kenny
himself.
Powers, yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's very true. Yeah. I guess Gronk can't really just throw a regular ceremonial first pitch. Just like, what did I see? Travis Kelce got his, was it an honorary degree or did he actually finish his degree from the University of Cincinnati? And he's on the stage. He gets his diploma. This happened this weekend. And what did he do to celebrate in front of everybody? He slammed a beer.
Smashed a beer, yeah.
Right in front of everybody. Like, I don't know any other student that would have a chance to do that. But then again, I also kind of wonder, I guess he can do whatever he wants, wherever he wants, whenever it is, whenever.
Are tight ends the new drummers? Is that just they?
All right, where's the correlation with tight ends and drummers?
They have the most fun. They spit on everybody. They do whatever they want, whenever they want. They live by their own set of rules. The drummers, if you think about drummers, and those are the guys that's like, oh, they have their own drum kit. So they got one kit, and then an axe man, a guitar player, he has 37 guitars, you know, but they just got one. So they cherish it, and they act a little different sometimes.
It's a lot of it's the drummers are the ones that end up dead early, right?
They're the party guys. They're the Gronkowskis. They're the Kelseys. You know, they're the guys that they're the life of the party. You know, that's it seems like the drummers are, they got it going on.
They're the ones who spontaneously combust in the middle of a show.
How do you dust for vomit? You know, there's no way to know. You can't do that.
I could see Gronk spontaneously combusting on a sideline.
But then he just comes into another one. Then there's two Gronks, you know?
Like, yeah, then there's another one that just kind of, because he's got a twin. He's got a twin that's just sitting on his shoulder there at every moment. Kelce is just all about combusting right now. Like, I mean, he's in a spot where I think he could just come out of the ocean on the beach, drop trowel, and everybody would cheer for him. It's just I think that he's in a sweet spot because you can't like, are you, what are we? Is this Porky's? We're up on it. We're up getting a diploma for a college diploma and slugging a beer right in front of everybody at age 31 too. I mean, I'm not going to be here and tell him to grow up or anything because I could use that advice myself. It's just, I don't know. I don't know. To me, it felt like it might have been a step too far.
He's like Ben Stiller in Zoolander. It's Merman, Phil. It's Merman.
I'm told Paul in Fort Smith tells me that that's just for his podcast. It wasn't an official graduation. I mean, it looked like there was a crowd around and everything. Well, it is the number one podcast in the country. So I'm sure they've got the kind of money where they could, you know, pay extras to just come around and make for a fake graduation to allow Kelce to slug a beer. And because that's the punchline when it comes right down to it. And that's the same idea as Gronk, just literally spiking a first pitch. Although with that, I mean, there's no pomp and circumstance of throwing a ceremonial first pitch. You just don't want to look like you've never thrown a baseball before. You don't want to look like
50 Cent.
That was the one I was thinking about. I was thinking Carl Lewis, but Lewis didn't. I don't remember.
He sang the national pitch.
He sang the anthem, and it really.
Yeah, whatever that was.
It was not the anthem.
It's like, did you practice ever? Like, you know, I know you're a finely tuned athlete, and these athletes, you don't make it to that level without practicing. I mean, you got to put work in. That's just how it is. Did you even sing the national anthem one time? Did you even do it once before you went out there?
Hey, I mean, I make fun of people whenever they pull the words out in front of them. But I also understand you got to be really nervous when you're singing that. You're like telling yourself, don't get the words wrong. Don't get the words wrong. You know all the words, but somebody eventually forgets them just because the nerves keep pounding them. Not everybody that sings a national anthem in front of a bunch of people at a baseball park or a football stadium or a basketball arena or whatever is used to performing in front of a crowd like that. Yeah, your brain can go blank sometimes. Gronk's brain, I'm not going to say it's blank because the guy is taking celebrity and turning it into a career.
He's Fox College footballer, so he was all over pregame shows this year. Colorado. I mean, he was in Colorado there three times in a row. They went to when Deion Sanders had him going. I mean, you saw Gronk on the stage half the time.
Hey, you got to be pretty intelligent to know. So, you know what? I probably got two or three extra years in me if I wanted to go play football. But why would I do that now? I've made my money. I've got
Hall
my championships.
Famer.
I'm in the Hall of Fame. I'm just gonna go be Gronk. I'm gonna go be Jersey Shore guy for the rest of my life and not just make a living out of it. But make a really good living at it and have fun while you're doing it too. Like if I went, I've never thrown a ceremonial first pitch in my life. I'd love to try it, but I'd be so nervous that I would bounce it. Speaking of first pitches, Jalen Milroe threw out the first pitch of Friday's game at Alabama. I've never seen an Arkansas football player come and throw a first pitch at a Razorback baseball game. If it's happened, I just wasn't paying attention. And usually you're supposed to, you know, it's up to whomever's thrown out the first pitch, whether or not you take the mound or if you just throw it from in front of the mound. Milroe went to the mound. He went up onto the rubber.
Because he's an athlete.
That's right. I don't know if he's ever played baseball before because it didn't look like he'd ever pitched. But he didn't bounce the pitch. He got it there. It almost looked to me like he was almost throwing a football. You know, you throw it just differently. He didn't necessarily get behind the baseball,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it was just, that was a very Alabama thing. Cause of course they had a day on Saturday.
Does Gronk smell like Axe body spray or patchouli? That's the question. You know, when
it's definitely Axe.
It's like, oh, I see. You smell him before he gets there. It's like, hey, there's Gronk.
It's definitely Axe. It's like a sour apple Axe. Do they even make that? I don't even know if they do. Never used any of that stuff before either. All that's going to do is just make it smell like body odor sour apple. 877-377-6963 for calls and texts. Got a text out of the 479 that a softball player threw out a first pitch at an Arkansas game. That was Robin Heron. She threw out the first pitch because she threw a perfect game. She didn't just, you know, get to throw out the first pitch because she's a softball player. She threw a perfect game and got
did she softball
with
style
first
it?
Pitch.
Or did she?
I don't think she did. No,
that would have been cool. That would have been, yeah.
You know, so throwing a softball like a pitcher, like a softball pitcher, you try to throw a baseball like that, that baseball's just going up in the
air. It's going that way, yeah.
It's just going right up. Good luck. It's not so easy. Yeah, I remember when she did that. She looked really good. Here's the other thing, too, and I've seen a lot of people question, is Cal going to throw out a first pitch at softball? Is Cal going to throw out a first pitch at baseball and everything? I think he's probably in demand to be at all kinds of birthday parties and Razorback clubs and all of that kind of stuff. And I know he'll do that stuff. Like, he's the kind of guy that I think he went to all corners. Well, Kentucky doesn't really have corners, but he went to every edge of Kentucky, you know, getting to know the fan base and getting to know the state. And I imagine he'll do the same thing at Arkansas. You kind of have to do that a little bit, but I don't know if right now throwing out first pitches would necessarily be on the radar. Putting a staff together.
Let's get some scholars. Let's get some guys that can field a basketball
together.
Team. Yeah, let's do that first.
Like I remember Musk threw out a first pitch when he was introduced as the head coach. But that was also before I think that was before, that was the year before the transfer portal really took hold. And that was like the introduction. We've already had the introduction with Cal now. So ceremonial first pitch, man, I mean, I don't remember Pittman coming out to throw a first pitch after the 9-win season, which he might have, but I don't know. My brain just doesn't really work 100% these days, so I forget a lot of these things. A call from Brent and Cersei before we break. Hey, Brent, thanks for calling our McLarty Daniel hotline. What's going on?
Hey, Phil and Matt, how are things going?
Yo.
Doing good, thanks.
Phil.
Yes.
I got two things I want to happen this week for Razorback baseball. Today and tomorrow and Wednesday. I want Kendall Diggs to stop taking two strikes.
Okay,
he takes
and what
way
else?
Too many pitches early in the count. And I don't see Ty Wilson hit the ball. He was 0-for-12 at Alabama, I do believe. Is that correct?
11. Well, actually 0-for-10. Okay. Yeah, I think there are going to be some changes as far as the outfield is concerned. Dave Van Horn said Peyton Holt is the left fielder now. And Peyton got a chance to be out there in back-to-back games, and I don't think it's a matter of would he be able to hit, because he can hit, and he can hit almost anybody. It's could he play the position, and he really did look like a real left fielder yesterday. To me, he didn't look like an infielder learning the outfield on the fly. He looked like an outfielder who knew what he was doing when he went up against the fence or was charging a ball towards the line or charging in for a base hit. So, yeah, I mean, you can't keep right now who's your best hitter out of the lineup, and Holt right now is that, at least statistically he is. He wouldn't have been able to take over third base because Sprague Lott is hitting and Sprague Lott is a better third baseman. But what they're looking for from corner outfielders right now, they're not getting, which is power production, run production, and getting on base. And it is alarming to see that Kendall Diggs now has an on-base percentage that's under 400. He has gotten himself into tough counts, as Brendan mentioned. But this is also one of the things that made Kendall the kind of hitter he was last year, is that he did work the count, and he would battle, and he might be maybe a little bit too passive at times right now. So you definitely got to get Diggs going. But he's got the track record of somebody that was one of the better run producers in the SEC last year. So I got faith that he can get back to that. But it's so, what's the term here? It's so unbalanced between offensive production on the infield and the outfield. A lot of times your best hitters are your left fielder or your right fielder. And in some years it's been the center fielder for the Hogs. Guys like Christian Franklin and Tavian Josenberger and Dominic Fletcher, they don't expect that out of Wilmsmeyer, but you can't be a zero right now, and he's just not getting on base. So I think they may try Edmondson. And these next 2 days against Texas Tech may give a little window into seeing what the idea is for the weekend against South Carolina. Appreciate the call, Brent. Thank you very much. 877-377-6963 if you want to get with us on anything about that. Hey, you know, the NBA playoffs are beginning. Is that today? NBA playoffs are starting.
Oh, I was going to say that. Not really. It's the play-in game, but I forget you're doing a thing. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, well, they call it the play-in. It's the the first four. It's the first six, isn't it?
Well, two of the teams in the East, they have losing records. It's like, yeah, let's add more people to it that are 7 games below 500. They should make the playoffs. It's everybody. It's every the professional sports are turning into everybody gets a ribbon. Like it really is. It's ridiculous.
Hey, Mike, let's start with the spring game. I didn't watch. I listened a little bit. I had my head in baseball for the weekend. So, what stood out to you from Saturday's spring game?
Well, it clearly was scripted for success. Anytime you have the twos or the ones going strictly against the twos both ways, offense and defense, you're going to be successful. And last year they didn't do that. Last year we saw a lot of ones versus ones, and the offense didn't look very good. And then in the fall we saw what happened. I understand why he did it that way. You've got a new quarterback. You want him to be successful. You want the fans to see that. And it worked. Taylen Green was was impressive. Now, yeah, he didn't have the pass rush that he would have gotten if he had gone up against the ones, but he threw some nice passes with hands in his face. He hit some pinpoint passes that were contested. I was impressed with the receivers. They didn't get wide open at times, but they caught the ball. So, you know, and then I was impressed with the running game, guys. JaQuindon Jackson from I guess
Utah,
right? I keep forgetting where he came from.
He's a Texas kid, but he went to Utah for a couple years.
He was running through some big holes at times, but there were some times when he made his own holes. And so I think that was impressive. I mean, what people don't want to – they keep talking about this offensive line, and I've really watched them. And, you know, Sam Pittman joked he's the oldest grad assistant in the country. He's also the best. Eric Mateos has got the best helper out there. And the two of them have teamed up to coach this offensive line. And I'll just tell you, I can always be wrong, but I believe after watching them work with these guys, and then you've got a new starting center, two new tackles, and the word is they're going after another portal transfer in this. Now that this spring is over, we'll be here this summer. I mean, you got a reworked offensive line with a new attitude and good coaches. I think it's going to work, guys.
Hey, Mike, I want to ask you, we lost, I thought, a kid that will get drafted in our field goal kicker, and you know special teams is going to win or lose at least one, maybe two games for you, I think, to the Florida game. We won that game based on Florida State, our Florida's not being able to run their special teams the correct way. Is our special teams going to be a strength? How's our field goal kicker going to be?
No, right now you can't have nice things, isn't what they always say about right. Razorback fans. Some things get better, something else gets worse. I think it's Sam Pittman will have fewer decisions to make now on fourth down. He's probably going to have to go for it instead of trying to kick field goals. Based on what we saw, it didn't look very good.
Well, hey, that's at least you have a game plan for it. If you know you got to get inside the 30 instead of inside the 50, at least you know so you can call you're in four down territory, then you plan accordingly.
Sure. I mean, it makes the decision making a little easier.
Mike, you're telling me the thing that I needed to hear. You know, it's like when, like last year, we started thinking about, well, what's the season going to look like? In spring, when Clay tells us that the tackles really looked like they were struggling, that was the clue, you know, that you might be in for a tough year. What you're telling us right now is you got the right people at tackle, and it sounds like you got the right guy in Addison Nichols at center. So, you know, I mean, there's offensive coordinator, quarterback change, yeah, big changes at running back and everything, but it has to start with those three positions. And it sounds like, I mean, and we don't know, because we won't really even know until we play Oklahoma State. And then you start to get a sense. But it sounds like, when I heard the things a year ago and I'm hearing negative things about the tackles, I'm hearing the opposite right now. That's telling me should be in for a better year.
Well, in those two scrimmages where we did see some ones versus ones, there was a big difference in the production of Taylen Green still threw a couple of touchdown passes in each scrimmage, but he threw a couple of picks too because he had hands in his face. And you know, there's another thing about the spring guys that we haven't even talked about, and that's this blow the whistle because you can't tackle the quarterback. I mean, Taylen Green would have probably scored three times on long touchdown runs without those whistles, because he got whistled with some guy reaching out and touching him, and there's no way that's a tackle in a real game. That's another thing this quarterback does. It's the running aspect. I mean, he can fly. So it all looks good. I don't want to overplay the offensive line. They still, at times in those one-versus-one scrimmages, there were still some times when they got to the quarterback. But it's better. I promise you it's better.
Hey, Mike, I want to ask you about our defense a little bit. I know we have to replace the linebackers. Did anybody stand out on the defensive side of the ball to you?
Yeah, you know, the pass rush was just really good. And I want to point this out, and I've already said this. The number two offensive line looked like a bad mid-major offensive line. They weren't very good. So pity the poor running backs that had to go up against those guys. Auguste St- Gustav is already transferred. I mean, they stuck him behind those guys, and he got about 5 yards on about 8 carries, and now he's gone. That's another bad thing about the transfer portal. That kid was promising. I mean, he was just getting started. But he doesn't, you know, feel good about where he's at after the spring, so he's gone. That's the world we live in now.
Any feeling like they might need to replace him at running back as far as getting one out of the portal? Or are you in a, you know, you're in a really good spot as far as depth is concerned, and he was one of the reasons why. So you know, you kind of got to find somebody now, right?
Well, we'll see. Pittman, I don't know if he was asked about that after the – I didn't go to that press conference, but I don't think they knew at the press conference. So he'll get asked at some point. We'll see what they do. But they still look pretty good. Now, if you start getting injuries, then that's another question. But I'd say right now they're okay at running back.
All right, so ask about basketball. I haven't had a commit come in yet. There's no reason to fret about that, really. Cal himself said this is going to take longer just because of the nature of the portal, and it had kind of, you know, just opened in the case of Kentucky, and some of those kids that he had recruited to Kentucky now have reopened their recruitment, and I think to them that doesn't mean I'm just following Cal to Arkansas. Yeah, they're looking around at potentially where they can go, but like everybody's expecting you're going to get a player or two off the Kentucky current roster. I know Big Z went into the transfer portal. Aaron Bradshaw went into the transfer portal. You'd love to get maybe one of those two big guys. And I think in our minds, we're all just sort of expecting that a chunk of the Kentucky recruiting class decides to come to Arkansas too. The only question is, you know, when do we start finding out a little bit about this?
You know, with Musselman, let's just be honest, guys, he was talking to a lot of these recruiting. You're not supposed to do that, but we all know what happens. And so even a hint of somebody coming in here, the people that cover recruiting with Arkansas basketball would know about it because Musselman would tell them. I don't, at least right now, I don't think they have that kind of relationship yet with Calipari. I don't know if they will. I think they're having to go through other sources to try and figure out what's going on with recruiting, and I think that's why we don't even have rumors right now. And people are getting a little antsy. I mean, Cal comes in here, has the press conference, everything's great, then he goes off to California and sort of hadn't heard from him since then. So I think people just are sitting there with their fingers crossed going, hey, we need some information now. Let's get some good news here. And as of this morning, we don't have any yet.
Okay, baseball. So you lose 2 out of 3 to Alabama. Some people get nervous. You lose ball games. I think it's more of an idea that that it just struggled to score runs this weekend. 3 runs in the last 25 innings. That would make you nervous. You just hope it doesn't keep happening. That's what this is about.
Well, you got this debate now, and here's what I do. I don't look at Facebook groups because there's a gang mentality. When you get like our Razorback Nation Facebook, you don't want to go there, guys. That's like walking into a bad neighborhood at midnight. You don't want to be there. But what I do is I go to people that are friends on Facebook with each other, and I know them to be Razorback fans, and I read the debates they're having. And there's a debate. It's back to that old Nate Thompson. I'm telling you guys, this stuff doesn't work. We need to go back to small ball. And then other people, are you kidding me? Dave Van Horn knows what he's doing. So then I go look at the numbers. And it's not very encouraging right now. I mean, I think they're down around 10th, 11th in team batting, or 9th, 8th, I think, in team batting. But then it drops in hitting to 11th or 12th, run scored 11th or 12th. They just don't generate. They've had timely hitting and scored runs in the right places, which is why they were able to sustain that winning streak. But there's an issue there, and Dave Van Horn acknowledged it earlier in the year. I think we all thought it was getting better, and now it kind of goes backwards. But then baseball, what is it? It's week to week, guys. It can change at any given time. So I don't think there's any reason to panic. But, you know, I'd like to know what's going on behind the scenes. I'd like to be in some of those meetings and find out how are they going to address this issue. Because, and then other people think, well, come on, you really need to play 2 midweek games before you go on the road. Now you got 2 more midweek games. Are we at a point in the season where you maybe just play 1 midweek game or no midweek games? there's all this debate going on, and I don't know what it means.
BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or mobile device. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team. And remember to use the promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Try the new Traveler Whiskey, a Chris Stapleton and Harlan Wheatley collaboration. A great buy. Also, Hard Truth, Sweet Mash, Bourbon, and Rye are available. Only at Eastside Liquor, 9390 Rogers Avenue in Fort Smith.
Nate, what's going on today at Scorebook Live?
Oh, we're churning out copies, Phil. We've got our Athlete of the Week stuff going today, so we've got a lot of stuff. Hey, I wanted to tell you before we got into it, I appreciate you letting me know on the broadcast the other night that was the ambulance at your stadium and not behind me, because with my new car and my surround sound, I thought I needed to pull over. So I'm glad that you were able to tell the listeners that was at the stadium. I listen to you a lot because I'm driving these kids all over the place. So, but I thought you'd get a kick out of that. I heard that ambulance, I was getting ready to pull over, and then you said, no, there's an ambulance here at the stadium.
I hadn't even thought about that would be a good reason to tell people why they hear sirens. That it has nothing to do with what I'm actually seeing. It's what they might be thinking going around them.
I meant to text you that, but yeah, so we are on the go all the time, going to practice, and we listen to you, and you and Bubba do a great job. You know that I love the broadcast, but that was funny because my son was in the car too. He's like, he's looking around, and then you said, no, the ambulance is here. So thank you for letting us know that, and all the great coverage.
I know one of the things that you've written about at Scorebook Live is a question that was asked to John Calipari at his press conference last week, and it also goes a little deeper also to the idea of not just basketball but all the sports and how they recruit in-state talent.
Yeah.
And I guess the question is, you know, Cal said he'll recruit in-state talent if they can play here. And I think that might be just a very simple way to look at it. I can't imagine that you go to a state, you go to a place like Arkansas or really any other school, and you're not at least looking at the in-state players. I guess part of the question is, how hard are you recruiting them?
Well, exactly. Well, and if you go to that story, you can go to that scorebooklive.com/Arkansas. And all that stuff on here that we're going to talk about, I'm glad you had me on, because there's a lot of things that I think that people will like to see that we're going to talk about. So go to this story and read it, because what I did was a deep dive on the recruits that currently have offers, that had offer from Musselman, and then some of the former players. So when you go that have been at Arkansas that have been good, so you go back, Calipari only offered two guys played for him, rather, Monk and Archie Goodwin, and then Nick Smith was heavily recruited by him, probably going to get an offer, but then he canceled a visit. I don't know if he formally got an offer, but he was going to get one, but he'd had a wrist injury, they wanted to see him in person, then he canceled a visit. So that's three guys. And then you look at the guys that have been at Arkansas that have gone to the NBA, Bobby Portis. Now, I think he was so firmly committed to Arkansas that maybe not a lot of people offered him. I saw that Kansas did, some schools like that. Certainly probably fit the bill for Kentucky, being a McDonald's All-American like Nick Smith. But Daniel Gafford, Isaiah Joe, those guys did not have offers, you know, from Kentucky. And Jalen Williams. So those are really good players that are playing in the NBA now. Moody, too, also was in the from North Little Rock, that went off to the academy to play for a couple years. He did not have an offer from Kentucky. So what I was trying to illustrate there is that he has really high standards. I mean, like super high standards. And Arkansas has produced in the past 15 years some really good basketball players. But he hasn't recruited them. So is he going to lower his standards to recruit Arkansas guys? Is that, you know, he didn't really do that to recruit Kentucky guys. you know, Reed Sheppard. He mentioned a couple of players, but that's like two or three out of 100, you know. So he did offer a few, but that's what I think from our point of view covering high school athletics is going to be interesting, because Eric Musselman recruited Arkansas kids. You know, he Pinion, Darian Ford, several guys, Devo Davis, you know, those guys were all recruited, and people were excited about it, and they were top 100, top 50 guys, but they probably would not have been recruited, you know, they did not get recruited by Kentucky. So that's the reason I brought that up, and then I did that kind of dive in there to show, you know, the rankings of the kids at that time, the rankings of the kids now. I mean, J.J. Andrews, a sophomore, is ranked 18th, and I think that's a slippery slope when you start talking about stars and rankings and stuff, because I'm not sure how all accurate some of those things are. But if you're going just by the numbers, you know, it's usually top 10 kids that he's going after, maybe top 20. So J.J. Andrews is one of the only ones right now going to his junior year that would kind of fit that mold according to the cumulative rankings of 24/7 Sports.
How important is it, I guess, for a guy like Calipari? I was just, you just kind of made me think of something, that does he try to keep it kind of under wraps? Because if you hear Calipari offers somebody and you're anywhere, wouldn't you just automatically try to make contact with that kid as well?
I suppose. And from some of the people I know in Kentucky, I mean, he's really particular how he does that. Like, apparently he won't offer kids until he's seen him in person. Mm-hmm. That's why the Nick Smith thing was a deal, because they wanted him, but I don't think he got an offer. And then, you know, he canceled his visit there, and they didn't get to see him at the Peach Jam and stuff because he was hurt. So, yeah, I think he's very particular how he does things. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, and this is just, I mean, a piece that points out some of the statistics and the rankings stuff. I am by no means saying that he has to recruit Arkansas guys to win, or that he should, or anything like that. But I do think the reason I think it's a, you know, an interesting thing to discuss, because Arkansas basketball players, high school basketball, has been very good, about the highest level it's been in decades. And you've seen guys that are playing in the NBA. You know, you've seen that where it's come to fruition, where they've come through the entire, you know, high school and college process, and then playing professional basketball, but they still weren't good enough to, you know, in his eyes, to play there. So, you know, we still are producing some really good players here. You know, Anar Boateng going to Missouri, he was the best player this year. I didn't mention him in the article, but he was a 4-star. Did not get offered by them. Arkansas wanted him really bad. I mean, they really wanted him. Musselman did. So just pointing that out, and kind of pointing out, you know, how good of a program he has and had, that he didn't have to recruit 4-star guys. Like, he could just, you know, get 5-star guys. I mean, that's the level he was at. And then, like I mentioned in the article, and where I think he can be at Arkansas too, and as I mentioned in the article, it was like, I think 7 or 8 times I mentioned in there, he had the number 1 class, and every time he was there, he's a top 5 class. So just illustrating the fact that he has discriminate taste. He's taking guys that are top 10, 1-and-done, McDonald's All-American guys. That's who he's taking. And we've had a couple McDonald's All-Americans. You know, we had Khalil Ware and Nick Smith, who I mentioned at North Little Rock, and we had Bobby Portis. But not too many after that. But we've had a lot of high-level players, though, guys that are top 50, top 100, Division I NBA guys. So I just thought that was interesting in light of him coming. I think he's going to do a great job, and I think he'll – maybe do things a little bit different than he did at Kentucky. He hit the portal a little bit more. But people have asked me, you know, do you think he can win a championship, Final Four? Absolutely. And I think he's going to have a more of a fire in his belly now, because people have doubted him and they're kind of ripping him for coming to Arkansas. I think that's the motivation he needed to end his career on a high note. Maybe got a little complacent, missed some assistance that he had. Now he tweaks a few things, does some different things, X's and O's wise, brings a couple different, you know, older kids in, and they run. They're going. I mean, but Arkansas is going to have a ton of talent, and I think there will be a couple Arkansas players that do make the roster over the next couple years. But just thought it was interesting to check that out and to compare and contrast some of our players against some of the, you know, the standard that he's had at Kentucky.
Tell me about, you know, I know you guys wrote about Kel Busby, who plays at Pulaski Academy. He's a pitcher. Was he the kid that stopped playing football in order to focus on baseball and pitching? And I don't remember what his arm injury was, but he came back from an injury, and he's pitching pretty well right now. And hopefully this is somebody that makes it to campus. But I would imagine if he's coming off an injury that, you know, even if he is draftable for scouts in this upcoming draft, that they might be a little wary, and he may end up getting to school.
He did not mention the MLB once. He talked about being on campus in June or July with some of the other pitchers taking summer school. So I don't think that's on his radar at all. A guy who, as you mentioned, a terrific quarterback, won a championship there. And maybe one of the reasons why PA didn't get back last year, they missed him. But he had that UCL injury last baseball season at the beginning, and he was trying to decide if he wanted to play football during that baseball season as they would get ready for spring football, and then that injury occurred. That basically tabled any kind of football decision that he had. It made it easy. He wasn't going to play football. He wasn't going to be able to. So, but he's rehabbed 53 weeks, and last Tuesday pitched 40 pitches against Mills and hit 92 miles an hour, which is one or two off of his best last year. So he is in good shape, and it just shows you the modern marvels of medicine, how it is so high-tech and so much better probably in the 70s and 80s when Tommy John first had that surgery. You know, they call it the Tommy John surgery because of the major league pitcher, played for the Yankees and many other teams. But guys can come back from it quicker, and he'll be on a 60-pitch count tomorrow. He's hoping by the end of the month when they start the regional tournament that he'll be throwing, you know, 80 pitches or more, trying to win some games in the playoffs. But they're going to be careful with him. They obviously don't want to hurt that again. So he's doing this all under the doctor's care. The doctor told him the date that he wanted to come back. He'd been pitching to live batting practice, the teammates to get ready, and he did a great job. He was throwing a lot of fastballs, mixed in his curve and slider in there a few times, but he said he was mostly going with the fastball, and he said it was really moving for him and doing well. So good news for Bruin fans and good news for Razorback fans. I think this is a guy, he's a good character guy, comes from a great school. The football program with Anthony Lucas, that's obviously rubbed off on him too, being in that great football program. So I think the Hogs are getting a good pitcher and a good kid, and looks like he's going to be fully healthy by next year if Dave Van Horn needs him to pitch as a freshman.
Hey, Nate, and just we're kind of up against the break, so in just a couple minutes, if you can, I know there's a new target for Kane Archer that's transferring into Greenwood from a high school in Omaha, Nebraska, and he's already got an offer from Nebraska, so maybe this is somebody that that Coach Pittman may end up looking at too.
Absolutely. I bet he'll be at the Arkansas camp this year. I don't have much doubt about that. Khalil Cham Davis, 5'10", 175, a little slot receiver with a lot of speed, already attracted the attention of Matt Rhule in Nebraska. I think he's going to get more offers. And now he goes to a good football program to a great one with a quarterback who is one of the tops in the country. So you've also got two other receivers opposite of you who went for over 700 yards, both of them. Grant Carnes went for 900, and Isaiah Arrington, 750. So that's going to make it where it's going to be almost impossible to cover him. They still need to replace a running back, but Archer's going to do more running, I think, this year too. So really good situation for all parties involved. I think he flourishes at Greenwood, gets several more Division I offers, and that's why I think he went there, is that he knows Archer from youth football, the travel stuff, and it's just one more feather in their cap. It's going to make them, you know, more of a favorite. I think most everybody that does high school football predictions is going to have them, is, you know, to win the championship again in 6A, and this only solidifies that, I think.
The Arlington Resort Hotel and Spa in downtown Hot Springs, Arkansas is the perfect destination for your next getaway. Join them for a romantic Valentine's Day getaway with a special dinner or romance package. Or if you're coming to town for live racing, they've got room for you every weekend, including Martin Luther King Day weekend and President's Day weekend. Experience all the luxury and hospitality of a Grand Southern Hotel. The accommodations are sure to please everyone. Visit ArlingtonHotel.com for more details. That's ArlingtonHotel.com.
Hey, sports fans, don't let plumbing issues throw you off your game. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric is here to tackle those pesky drain blockages and ensure your water heater is always in MVP form. With Pascal's world-class service, you can count on a winning play every time. Whether it's a quick drain clear or a water heater touchdown, Pascal's got the expertise to keep your home running smoothly. Stay in the game and leave the plumbing to the pros. Schedule your service online anytime at gopascal.com. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric.
One thing too here, I'm not somebody that believes you got to have a losing weekend in order to because eventually you're going to have one. Now I do also appreciate the idea that losses happen in baseball, but I have seen a team run the whole table and win an SEC championship. Whether or not that had anything to do with them losing to Nebraska that year, I don't think it did. But right now it's an offensively challenged team. First up, Peyton Holt. Has to. And for those who've been clamoring for him to get in the lineup, I know you got to be feeling pretty good about his chance now to be the everyday left fielder. Dave Van Horn pretty much said as much yesterday after the loss in the press conference that left field is Holt's. But he wouldn't have had a chance to play any other position right now. You wouldn't have had him at third base because there's no reason to take out Jared Sprague Lott. The opening has occurred because you're just not getting any production from corner outfield at the moment. And that's where you need some. You need your left fielders. You need your right fielders to hit. They got a field, understood, but they got a hit. And Holt did that. Had the three-hit game, including the dramatic game-tying home run in the ninth. Just always seems to have a flair for the dramatic. And then almost knocked in a run yesterday with a line drive in the second inning that was caught in short center field. I guess I was more impressed with how Peyton looked in the outfield. Sometimes, Matt, you know, there, like in sports, sometimes you'll see, well, I guess, I don't know if it works in football or anything or any of the other sports. In baseball, you know, you can have a guy who's athletic and he's an infielder, and you put him in the outfield to see if he can play the position, and he just looks like an infielder who's at the wrong position. Holt didn't look like that. He looked like an outfielder. He looked like somebody who can play left field. And even if he would struggle in left field, I think they would put him out there right now anyway, because that's the situation they're facing. Lovich has struggled in left. Not in the field, well, in the field a little bit, but at the plate more than anything. Edmondson has been a little hit and miss. And then there's the idea that maybe Edmondson moves into center field because Wilmsmeyer has really struggled. As Brent called earlier today and pointed out, Wilmsmeyer went 0-4-10 in Alabama, and he is one for his last 20, which doesn't make any sense to me because he'd hit over 300 in the SEC last year for Mizzou. So he's already hit this kind of pitching before, and maybe that has a little something to do with that he's been scouted and teams have an idea how to pitch to him. But right now he's not hitting. He's fielding well. So if you move Edmondson into center field, then maybe you lose a little bit in the field, you gain a little bit with the bat. So I love putting Holt in there, and I'm just impressed with somebody that went. I think it was almost a month. It was a little more than 3 weeks from his only other SEC start against Mizzou to the second game of the series against Alabama, and then he hits the game-tying home run in the ninth inning, which was one of the really cooler moments of the baseball season. A second up is that all three starting pitchers went at least five innings, which doesn't sound like it's all that important or all that big, but it's the first time it's happened in an SEC weekend. You get six scoreless from Hagan Smith, lowered an ERA into the 150s with that. Mason Molina finished six, and Brady Tigert gave you five. Even though Brady didn't have his best stuff, allowing one run with the traffic he had on the bases, I was really impressed with that. Christian Fauch also is the third up. He hit 101 miles an hour in, I think that was Saturday's game. Wow, 101. He threw a pitch, and the video board monitor said 100. But Oliver, who's the SID for baseball, has TrackMan on his laptop, and he's sitting up and behind me, and he said that it came in at 101 on TrackMan. So 100 is cool. 101 is just a little bit cooler. But we do worship at the altar of velocity a little bit too much. So that would be my first down, is the idea of velocity always being the first thing we mention when it comes to a pitcher. You know, I don't know if you've seen this, Matt, but there's been a debate going from the the Players Union, Major League Baseball Players Association, where the head of the union, Tony Clark, has said that they're blaming some of the rise in pitchers' injuries to the pitch timer, which I don't really think it has anything to do with it, because the rise in injuries has occurred much more over the last 10, 15 years, and the pitch timer's only been around for two seasons in Major League Baseball and I think three or four in Minor League Baseball. It's about worshiping at the altar of velocity. It's always the first thing that we mention when you mention a pitcher, instead of that he's got movement on his fastball, or he can hit the corners, or he's got a good breaking pitch. And even the breaking pitches sometimes, because of the camera technology that we have at our disposal, you know, guys can spin the ball more than they have before because they have the video evidence of how to do it. You know, more velocity, more spin, I think means more stress on an elbow ligament. And I think that has a lot more to do with pitcher injuries than a pitch timer. So while I'm giving a thumbs up to Fouch because throwing 101 miles an hour is really cool, I'm also one of the people that's probably guilty of worshiping a little bit at the altar of velocity here. So I hope it doesn't lead to an injury for him, because the kid's got an incredible future. What else? If I try to go to another down, three runs in the last 25 innings of the Alabama series is a serious down. You got to find a way to score more than just three runs on solo homers. Those were the only three runs that they scored after the third inning on Friday were solo home runs by Stovall, Sprague Lott, and then Holt all on Saturday. And, you know, I mean, some folks are texting in wondering, you know, do you panic about it? You know, what back-to-back losses or everything? My third down goes to the idea of panicking after one weekend where you lost back-to-back games on the road in a place where Alabama, by the way, has beaten Tennessee 2 out of 3 and South Carolina 2 out of 3. Tennessee's got one of the more dangerous lineups in the entire country. They very well could be in Omaha. Hogs get South Carolina this weekend. That's a good team. Alabama's not, I don't think they're just a mid baseball team this year in the SEC. I think that team's going to make a regional. They could make some noise. No panic. There's no panic in the team. I don't think there's any panic in the coaches. And the reason is because of the pitching staff. Pitching staff will always settle things down. If you have the kind of pitching that this team has, it should be able to settle things down. It keeps you in games. I'd be more worried if they were going out losing 10-1. If they'd won 30 of the first 33 games and then go out and lose 10-1 and 9-6, I'd be a little bit nervous, because then you start worrying about the pitching a little bit. These hitters will come around. Kendall Diggs is much more what he was last year than what we've seen in the last 3 weeks. Sprague Lott's coming around. Stovall has come around. Souza, hit and miss. He's a freshman. With Holt in the lineup now, maybe every day, I think you'll get a little more consistency from the corner outfield. The team can hit a lot more than they showed this last weekend. It also does show you that in this sport, even the best teams can be pitched to. You see some of the numbers that Texas A&M is putting out there. I'd be very interested to see when these two teams meet, because the Arkansas pitching staff is a heck of a lot different than even the Vanderbilt pitching staff, than even the Kentucky pitching staff. So you can pitch to good teams. You can pitch to good hitters. That's what I saw from Alabama this last week, and that's your three up and your three down. 877-377-6963 for calls and texts on the McLarty Daniel Hotline. We'll come back. And no, let's not. Let's take a phone call from Brian in Ozark, and then we'll have the break. Brian, you got to turn your radio down before I put you back on, because you know how this is done. 3, 2, 1. Brian, you're on Halftime. What's up?
Hey, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Thank you.
I was just curious. I mean, if you're a little bit concerned about Arkansas hitting, it really didn't look very good all weekend against Alabama, and I'm kind of concerned about Texas Tech, because their record doesn't show what kind of team they are. I mean, they are a very good team. I mean, is that a concern to you?
Not hitting if it continues to happen. Look, I mean, they hit well enough against Ole Miss the week before. They really did. They hit well against San Jose State as well. If it continues, you know, if what Alabama did this last weekend is mimicked by South Carolina, and then after that, so on and so, then I guess start to get worried a little bit. I don't think that pitcher did anything truly special. I think Arkansas batters got themselves out a little. And as far as like Texas Tech is concerned, you see some really frightening numbers from them. They hit 324 as a team. They're scoring almost 10 runs a game. But these numbers are way skewed by where they play. They play in Lubbock. I've been to that part of Texas. The Midland Rockhounds are a Texas League team. You couldn't trust the statistics coming out of that ballpark. That's a hitter's haven. Lubbock is a hitter's haven. So I see a team that in their last six games at home has scored 10 or more runs. But I also saw a team that scored a total of 5 runs in the last 2 games in Dallas-Fort Worth against TCU. So they're coming into a much different place. The numbers, the statistics for Texas Tech and their offense, I don't really think they mean very much on the road at all. So, but I do think they're a good team, and I think these next 2 games will be pretty important.
Hickey and Hull Law Partners are now here for you and all your legal needs in Mena and the Little Rock area. Hickey and Hull Law Partners specializing in divorce, custody case, civil litigations, and more. Having over 7 decades of combined experience to better serve you and the community you live in. Please visit kevinhickeylaw.com or call us at 479-434-2414 for a consultation or come by an office nearest you. Things are about to get better.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris George from Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas gifts, weddings, heirloom family treasures. And at Joshua's Fine Jewelry, we only have one sale every year, and it's right now. Every single item in our store is value priced for Christmas. We do custom one-of-a-kind jewelry. If that's what you're looking for, come see us. You can get anything fixed for a Christmas gift. Selection, quality, service, and Christmas red tag prices now through Christmas at Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville.
Connor, how you doing today?
Doing well. I feel like I watched so much football this weekend that my brain is just full of spring game thoughts. I'm trying not to overreact to, but at the same time, it's tough when this is all we get this time of year.
Okay, so there are spring games, and then there are just other things that are sort of like a thing that they're doing in spring that is something like football. Can you explain to me what was going down at Ole Miss on Saturday?
It was the Pro Bowl. It was the same thing. Same thing as the Pro Bowl. If you can kind of peel it back and understand like what Lane Kiffin's objectives still are at Ole Miss, you could very easily figure out what exactly he was trying to do. Instead of having an intra-squad scrimmage wherein fans probably weren't going to really show up and it wasn't going to be that entertaining and they were going to, you know, not necessarily be, you know, streamed on, you know, like ESPN or anything like that, he decided, okay, let's try and get a win. And Lane is always just about trying to get that win. He never takes an L. That's not what he does. Let's get as many eyeballs as possible on our program for having a unique experience. We have plenty of other time for scrimmages and things like that. We've got an experienced team. I don't need to see these guys out there in a spring scrimmage. And he said, let's have these competitions. Let's have these guys still compete. Let's have Joey Chestnut come in here and eat a disgusting amount of hot dogs. Let's have tug of war contests with sororities. Let's have slam dunk contests. Let's have all of it. And let's just make this like the Pro Bowl. And that's what Lane did. If you liked it, you liked it. If you didn't, you didn't. I think they're okay to get out of there without an injury. But Lane was all about not taking an L, and I would look at that as probably not taking an L.
All right. Well, then who had a spring game that felt much more like an actual game?
Georgia. Guys, the Georgia spring game was really intense. Like Kirby said, we want ones on ones, and we're going to treat this like a real game because we have reps to be able to do this. And we feel like both of these units, like this will be the best unit that they see all year. Carson Beck is out there with a minute left in this game, having already thrown like 45 passes, trying to put together a last minute drive. And Dom Lovett ends up making this unbelievable catch, pinning the ball to the back of a DB to be able to get a game tying score. That felt like an actual game. I think Alabama's, I think too, felt like an actual game. 72,000 people there, new coaching staff, different kind of buzz. for obviously this post Nick Saban world that we're living in. But yeah, those two programs, like it really felt like an actual game out there because of the talent on the field and the fact that they actually had the crowd to be able to support it.
Hey, did you get a look at Missouri's spring game? Have they had theirs yet? Is it, you think that's a team that can win 10 games next year?
Missouri had their spring game, I think, a month ago, which is weird. Like, really, really weird. My wife actually asked the exact same question. She's like, is Mizzou playing today or something like that? I don't know why that came up, but I was like, yeah, they're like a month ago, and it was very much under the radar. But, yeah, I think that the big question for Mizzou is, like, what's going to happen on the defensive side of the ball after LSU poaches their top two defensive coaches and Blake Baker's gone, and they've got a lot of guys that you're going to hear their name called in the NFL draft. Like, half of their defense is going to get drafted this year. And I think the question is going to be, all right, what are we going to see on that side of the ball? But there's a lot of optimism that this should be not only one of the best offenses in the SEC, but one of the best offenses in all of college football, with Kirby Moore coming back as the primary play caller. For my money, the more talented of the Moores who call plays, more talented than his brother Kellen Moore. But I think that seeing Luther Burden in this offense last year made you excited for what he could do in his pre-draft season and all the pieces that they have around them. They loaded up at running back in the portal. Just a really, really fun group coming off of a New Year's Six Bowl victory, and a group that I think a lot of people might be sleeping on, or at least if they are now, they probably won't be by the time the season actually starts.
So if you watched all of them on Saturday, you must have seen the Hogs. They were on SEC Network. What stood out in the 2 hours that they played?
Besides Luke Haas taking off a defensive back's head, look, that play was insane. Like I didn't see that live. I had to see that on the replay, but like, oh my gosh, we got pads popping. This is not, you know, just two-hand touch out here that we're playing. Given the injury history, I'm sure they'd like to avoid those situations with Luke in the preseason here. But I think that Arkansas fans have an understandable level of excitement for Talen Green in the Bobby Petrino offense. I think at this point, you know what didn't work last year. You know, whether you want to pin that entirely on Dan Enos, whether you want to say some of that was KJ, you could say it's on the offensive line. There were a lot of things that contributed to the product that we saw on the field last year for that Arkansas offense. It doesn't mean it's instantly going to be like night and day with this group, but you've seen enough from the Boise State transfer to make you think that he's going to be able to rectify a lot of those mistakes. The RPO game, which you can't even really see in a spring game. Like, he had two runs that were called back that probably are going for six if they're able to be called like a real game. And you see the connection that he has with these receivers already. And you hear the way that he's talked about the leadership traits, all those different things. There is a fair amount of optimism, I think, that if you can at least be better in that area and more consistent, you're going to have a chance. And I say that as somebody that's an admitted KJ defender, as big of a KJ supporter as there is, but it's hard not to be optimistic about those guys so far.
When I think of Ole Miss's spring game, one of the knocks on Lane Kiffin is not being really a tough enough team. If you're going to beat Ole Miss, you kind of got to kick them in the teeth and they'll fold. Do you think that could be something to worry about if you're Ole Miss this year? Because we know they're going to have the talent.
Yeah, look, it's a fair question. I don't think last year they had the talent. Like, I think that some of the toughness questions that have been asked in the past, I think, have been justified. I would tend to look at the way that they run the football and say that's a team that, like, if they weren't tough, there's no way they'd be able to have such a high floor running the football. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt there. But, you know, I think that you look at the talent that they brought in on the defensive side, especially in the portal, and you think to yourself, all right, if they can't figure things out now and get those pieces to work and be able to take that next step once again and compete with the Georgias of the world, when will it happen? And that's a very high bar to set, but it's a program that finished in the top 10 and had, you know, an 11-win season for the first time in program history. We're asking these questions because they've given us reason to ask them, but it's going to be about whether or not they can get all these pieces to fit on the defensive side of the ball, and if Pete Golding can lead in one of the better defenses in the SEC, because you know their offense is going to be special with the weapons they return, the weapons they bring in, like a Juice Wells, like a Logan Diggs from LSU. There's a lot to like there, but yeah, the toughness question is probably going to come up, and if they lose to Georgia or a team like that, it'll be asked again.
So I know Kentucky was supposed to play a spring game this weekend, but did they really play, or did they just have a celebration in Rupp Arena that is getting all the conversation?
Yeah, look, the reception for Mark Pope, I mean, my goodness, was second to none. I know there was some Arkansas interest on that side, obviously. But, yeah, the spring game, we can't really call it that. If, one, it's not really a true game, and, two, it's not available to be streamed, which it wasn't. I actually watched highlights from my guys over at KSR who, you know, had video, boots on the ground type stuff there, and was able to see, you know, some of the comments post-game and some of the reaction to it. So that was my perspective of it. You couldn't just sit down and turn on SEC Network and watch this. But, you know, I think there are a lot of people wondering with Kentucky, like, what does this offense look like after my doppelganger Liam Cohen went back to the NFL? They want to see what Bush Hamden, the new OC, looks like with Brock Vandegrift coming over from Georgia after 3 years of sitting on the bench behind great quarterbacks there. And they want to see, all right, can this defense actually bounce back after really an atypically bad year it was last year? So, yeah, it wasn't really much of a spring game showing. It's hard to gauge too much from Kentucky, but under the radar is kind of the way that Mark Stoops likes it.
Hey, do you get a chance to see Rocket Sanders at South Carolina, and who's going to be their quarterback this year? How do you like South Carolina?
Yeah, so they'll be in action this upcoming weekend. Okay. So we'll get hopefully more from a better look at Rocket. I hope we can get Rocket healthy because, man, last year was just it was a bummer. It really was, and you know it's unfortunate that it played out the way that it did at Arkansas. I feel like he's not really being talked about that much at South Carolina because, you know, he went from one team with a shaky offensive line to another team with what we consider to be a shaky offensive line. South Carolina hasn't run the football particularly well during the Shane Beamer era. They need to be able to do that better. They haven't had an explosive playmaker quite like Rocket Sanders when healthy, but it's going to be interesting to see kind of how they pair him. Being able to have a quarterback in Lenora Sellers, so everybody kind of assumes it's going to be the guy. They added Robbie Ashford from Auburn, but I think that Sellers is going to end up winning that starting job. And if they can form that 1-2 punch, there'll be a lot of people going, man, this feels a lot like what Rocket and KJ, what we thought they could be. They need to be able to get better in the trenches. You talk about the toughness question with Ole Miss. The toughness question is fair to ask with South Carolina with how much they've struggled both running the football and defending the run during the Shane Beamer era.
And I know Alabama had a spring game this weekend, and I know that without even reading your piece, because I was in Tuscaloosa this weekend. I saw Jalen Milroe throw out the first pitch. I thought it would have made sense if they'd have Gurmi Bernard catching it for him, but they didn't. They had an Alabama catcher catch it instead. And then on Saturday, the baseball game started 2 hours after A-Day started, and you could see, like, once you got into the third inning, the ballpark swelled up. People came over from the football game and were not there at the start of the baseball game. I don't know what happened. What happened at Alabama?
Lovely Saturday. That's a nice little Saturday in Tuscaloosa.
It was.
You know, we'll get a whole lot of these spring days like that, but to be able to do that, I'm sure the great people of Alabama appreciated that very much. Yeah, I think that everybody's wondering what this new offense is going to look like with Kalen DeBoer. Michael Penix Jr. and Jalen Milroe are very, very different players who so far in their careers have been asked to do very different things. And what's it going to look like with what we think will be a more pass-heavy approach on the offensive side of the ball? Jeremy Bernard, who follows Kalen DeBoer from Washington, he looked like the best player on the field in that spring game. He looks like he's going to be a go-to target for Jalen Milroe. They really haven't had a true go-to wide receiver one the last 2 years at Alabama. Can Bernard kind of be that guy with his familiarity with the system? One would think he projects really well, but yeah, seeing him, seeing Ty Simpson, a guy that a lot of people could be watching as a potential portal guy, if he's still locked into that QB2 role, he could have a significant market if he does decide to hit the portal and not wait around, you know, post Jalen Milroe era, all that stuff. And he looked a lot better. So yeah, I think Alabama fans are feeling optimistic about the start of the Kalen DeBoer era, the beginning of the post Saban era, as weird as that is to be able to say.
Well, now we've got to be ready for mass chaos because you got the basketball portal open. Football portal opens tomorrow, doesn't it? It's 2 weeks in the spring, right?
Yeah, it opens tomorrow. I don't know why they don't do this on a Monday. You know, like, who starts something on a Tuesday? Like, can we get that figured out? I mean, I had to like explain to people like, no, actually, you know, look at the NCAA website, April 16th on a Tuesday, they decided to open this thing. Yeah, it's going to be chaos, I think. I don't think it's going to be chaos at quarterback. It's just, it hasn't been in the past. If you kind of look at the post-spring quarterback market, you like to be able to have those spring reps in there. And so I don't really think it yields to that. Who knows? Maybe we get a couple of big splashes there. But I think there's going to be a lot of movement just because you can't regulate it. The post-Tennessee NCAA ruling, all of these post-January job changes that we had that opened up a 30-day window at places like Alabama, Washington, Arizona, Michigan. There was a lot of movement there where it's a one-way street. So those guys are going to be active in the portal. I think we're going to see a ton of movement over the course of the next few days. And I think we're going to have our craziest post-spring portal yet.
I'm sorry, what your colleague Matt Hayes is calling it, college football's doomsday. Is that going a little too far, or do you think he's about accurate there?
I never question the work of the great Matt Hayes. I never question it. He's usually got a pretty good inkling on these things. So I'll kind of wait and see how that plays out. I don't know that we're going to be saying it's doomsday, it's the end of the world, it's the end of college football as we know it, but I do think we need to brace ourselves for some crazy scenarios. A lot of established players potentially entering the portal. Not quite maybe on the level of like a Jordan Addison leaving Pitt for USC a couple years ago, but I do think that we could be in for some headliner names that are making some moves, and maybe it'll make some college football fans feel like it's doomsday.
You're listening to the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast. Check out the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast at hitthatline.com.
This podcast has been presented by Bet Online.
This podcast is an exclusive property of Pearson Broadcasting. It may not be copied, reproduced, modified, published, uploaded, reposted, transmitted, or distributed in any way without Pearson Broadcasting's prior written consent.